25 shivers.
The silver. What? I need to talk after that. Chuck, here we are. The silver episode of Bat and Spider.
25. Mm. 25.
And still young.
It feels stupid patting ourselves on the back this early, but I tell you what,
I know.
I mean, not, this is not a reflection of you. This is a reflection of me. I never thought I would make it this far.
Look at us. Chuck, I'm proud of you then.
Thank you.
I mean, to even think, we were under pandemic when this started, right?
Yeah. We still are, right?
We're here. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like 25 episodes of Bat and Spider.
Yeah.
Self-contained within this goddamn thing.
I know. It's crazy. It's getting, lockdown is, it's been so long. Like, it's, when did it start? March?
March 13th.
It seems so long ago. Like, it's getting cold out now. Like,
and I mean, for as many movies as I can talk about in the beginning segments of our episodes, mm-hmm. if at any certain point I have to go back to work and work from an office, yeah. I won't get any movie watching done, Chuck. It's going to be me back to talking about how exhausted I am and barely fitting in one movie.
Yeah. This podcast is doomed when that happens. You're going to start coming in episodes having watched the first 10 minutes and last 10 minutes of the movie.
Right.
Yes. And just BSing your way in the middle.
When I was in eighth grade, I tell this story all the time, but I don't think I've ever told on Bat and Spider. When I was leaving seventh grade, the last day of seventh grade, a couple of us, they announced over our names over the PA. We had to go to the principal's office.
Oh, shit.
And it was just the office in general, but it was, and we walk in the office and there's like a box of books and they hand out these books. They're like, okay, you got to read these over the summer. Attached are the instructions on what you need to do. And I had to do a report over the summer on The Hobbit. The last day of school, I find this.
No. Out. Wait, were you special? Because they called you and a few other people?
Well, I think it was the kids who were going to be in the eighth grade, like, best version of the class.
So you, like, you'd done so well that they were like, we're going to give these kids homework during summer vacation. Yeah,
because these kids are somebodies. They are going into like AP, whatever eighth grade AP English and literature was, right? And I guess that's what
sick.
It was.
I feel right. sick.
So, and speaking of, that's where it all started going downhill for me. I failed that class miserably because I was so terrible at diagramming sentences. Anyway, 2 days before school starts, and I'm 2 days before I'm due to start eighth grade, and I still hadn't read this stupid Hobbit because nobody's going to make me read anything.
Mm-mm.
So I read the first and last paragraph of each chapter of the Hobbit, and I BS my way through the middle.
Yes.
And I got like a D-.
Yes.
On it because I did technically, I did the work.
That
I
rules.
Put something on paper.
I may have done that with Catcher in the Rye, something similar. And I think I got a really good grade. I don't remember what it was, but
nice.
My English teacher and I had a special connection. So she thought I was amazing. And in turn, I thought she was amazing.
So sweet.
But yeah, I was a bad reader and I still am.
So you didn't have Mrs. Fox is what you're saying?
No, sorry. Did not have Mrs. Fox. I had Mrs. Ashenfelder.
Okay.
Who had you'll appreciate this, on the back of her clipboard, she had Grateful Dead stickers.
Whoa. Yeah.
She was very tan. She had like 10 silver bangles on each wrist. And she had short gray hair. She was
my
so cool.
Heart. She was my awesome. Heart goes out to Mrs. Ashenfelder. Wow.
Yeah. Shout out to Mrs. Ashenfelder. Thank you for believing in me and my creativity. It meant a lot at the time.
Wow. That's sweet.
Still does. Yeah. Well, gosh, we're doing another episode on David Cronenberg's Shivers, his first commercial work from 1975.
Here we are. We're going to be getting to that at the bottom of the hour. It's going to be very exciting to get into it. We have a lot of feedback. A lot of people watched along with us this time, and that's empowering.
It's a new feeling. I'm not sure if I like it, Dale. I
know. We'll get into that as well. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Absolutely true. But in the meantime, Chuck, you got anything to talk about in the what we call the front segment? I just named it that.
The app. This is the app menu, right? Is that what they call it at like Chili's or TGI Fridays? A couple of apps?
In Luca, they would call it aperitif.
Yes. Aperitif. Actually, it just shot in my head that we have a special announcement that maybe people who don't follow us on Instagram and stuff should know about. Is that we started a Discord server, which young people who like video games and hang out on the internet use Discord servers to keep in touch. And we're using it to for you guys, for listeners, to hang out. Talk about movies you watched and talk about these episodes and stuff, and maybe create a little community where we can just get together and, you know, talk about Shivers.
Yeah, it's been really fantastic so far. The folks who have seen it on our Instagram and have felt so inclined to join, there's no pressure to join. It's basically like, you know, a chat app. If you haven't used Discord before, you just download Discord, sign up, and you join our server. And it's just like a chat room, and you can talk to us and talk to the other folks who listen to the show and talk about movies, talk about whatever you want on the Bat and Spider Discord server.
Yeah, it's like, I always liken it to like a private Twitter server. Like it's not, you're not really in public. It's more of a, you know, a small community of friends. And yeah, it's pretty fun. We'll put it in the show notes. There will be a link, a direct link in the show notes. But I did watch some movies since we last talked, Dale. I watched...
let's get into it.
God, I've been on a kick of old Universal horror movies. I've actually been fighting myself that Scream Factory, they've been putting out these collections of... I think each one has four Universal horror movies. Like, it's everything minus the big guys. Like, there's no Dracula or Frankenstein movies. It's like all the other ones that they put out. You know, from like the 30s and 40s, I guess. And I can never pull the trigger on them, mainly because it's like a lot of them I can just watch streaming.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just like, whatever. So anyway, I ended up watching one. A friend of mine suggested this movie, The Old Dark House, because we were talking about last episode, Abbott Costello Frankenstein. I was like, was that like the first kind of horror comedy? And he suggested, oh, maybe The Old Dark House possibly could be a very early contender. And that's from 1932.
Wow.
And it's by James Whale, the director of Frankenstein, and it's got Boris Karloff in it. So this was like hot on the heels of Frankenstein. They made this right after. And it's just like a, you know, it's your typical, I mean, it probably wasn't typical back then, but you know, people in a rainstorm, they have to stop because it's, you know, they're going to die. You know, there's mudslides and stuff. So they just end up at this spooky dark house in England. And boy, it's filled with a family of messed up people.
Whoa.
And they're sort of like, and you know, all the people who come are like young and hip and like, you know, they're like flirting with each other and stuff. But they're encountered with this weird family with these weird dynamics of these like old people, like sniping at each other. And like, you know, and they find out, don't go to the top floor. Cause, my brother's locked up there and he can't come out or else he'll burn the whole place down.
Damn.
So it's like, and Boris Karloff plays like the assistant, or he's like their kind of butler, but he's also a member of the family, but he's all screwed up in the head and he gets drunk in his like barn room and starts attacking people.
This is 1932.
Yeah. And it's like, it's all like, but it is very lighthearted when you like it. It sounds kind of dark, but it's done. It's like a silly 30s comedy, but with spooky elements. It didn't rock my world, but it's actually, the more I think about it, the more I like it.
Your world's rocked right now, Chuck. I can tell.
It's a little bit rocked, yeah.
Jeez, you're smiling from ear to ear. I can see you.
And then on top of that, I watched The Raven, which is from 1935. Have you seen that?
No.
It's like, it's not a direct like adaptation of The Raven. It's like, it's Bela Lugosi plays this like retired doctor who like, he like.
Was Bela Lugosi old enough to retire then in real life?
He looked pretty old, actually. But like, he's like this power hungry guy who's obsessed with Edgar Allan Poe, and he made like a dungeon in his basement, and like, he like made the pit in the pendulum. He made the pendulum thing and like a place to strap someone in. And he like made all these torture devices and rooms and stuff because he's insane.
Yeah.
And he blackmails Boris Karloff. Like, he disfigures Boris Karloff's face by like severing like a nerve ending. And then he's like,
Jesus,
I want you to kill these people that I'm going to invite to a sleepover party. And if you do that and put them in these torture chambers, then I'll fix your face. That's like the basic God. Setup. It's pretty cool.
Wow. That's jacked.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I've been, yeah.
Chuck, you're riding a lot of old stuff, my friend.
I want to keep watching these old, really old ones. I'm really into it. They're so beautiful. I just love these sets and these old black and white things and the shadows, and I can't get enough of it. What about you, Dale?
I'm in the game now, folks.
I'm sorry,
Chuck. You dirtball.
I'm sorry, but very not sorry, because I'm glad to have you in this hole with me.
I mean, I am going to have to watch this the male guy and like have like a rope out the window and smuggle it right upstairs. You understand what I'm about to go through?
Yeah.
We pre-ordered some DVDs.
Yeah. So the wonderful company Vinegar Syndrome, who's known for putting out like lots of amazing movies that we should be watching on the show. You know, and they put out like four or five releases a month, but it's coming up on their Black Friday time, which is always a big time for Vinegar Syndrome. And this year, I think because of COVID and stuff, they did a flash sale this weekend in September as a pre-order for their November releases, and discounted even more than they will be when they are put up for pre-order properly. And I mean, the big title, this year they've started putting out 4K discs, and the big title, like when I saw it, I was like, oh boy. And I like sent the link straight to you.
You did. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought to check this website, even though I knew the sale was going on. I, you know, it's just would have passed my mind, but you sent it directly to me like the push man.
How could I not? Imagine if I didn't, Dale. You'd
it be is so a 4K box release of my beloved Beastmaster.
Oh yeah.
So
who's the director? What, Coscarelli, right? Don Coscarelli. I think it seems like he's pretty involved too. I remember recently, a few months ago, he put out didn't he put up some website where he was looking for a good print or like a good negative of Beastmaster? Do you remember? Did you see this?
No, that would line up
perfectly. Yeah, he was like crowdsourced. He's like, if anyone has any like tips on a good version of Beastmaster, and it kind of makes sense that this is announced. He was trying to probably find the best version. I think this might be it might be longer. Like I think it's his cut. So might have new stuff in it that, you know, the layman hasn't seen.
So if Coscarelli's more directly involved in this, I mean, yeah.
And judging by like the only other 4K disc I got from Vinegar was the Rad disc, and that was just an amazing package. I mean, these guys, they do not skimp, and they do, I don't know how, they get interviews from people that you just like, they just track down even like the smallest actor in these like super low budget movies. Like they'll go and interview them, and it's always amazing. But also in this month's release are, the one I'm probably most excited about is they're putting out another Giallo box set, which this will be three movies. that are proper Italian ones. One is called The French Sex Murders. Great name. The other one's called My Dear Killer. And the last one is called The Girl in Room 2A. I don't know which one of these, but one of these is, it's an Italian movie shot in Italy, but it's directed by an American. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
An American director doing a giallo. So
yeah.
I'm kind of hyped on that. What else is in here?
There's a slasher movie too.
Yeah, there's two slasher movies. They haven't announced them, but one is in 3D, they said. Like, that's what they said. But the other one we do know is Fade to Black, which I've never seen. But people seem excited. It's like a... What is it? I think it's sort of a meta slasher movie.
And I think what the unreleased, unannounced one is, they basically said, like, this is a big movie.
Yeah.
You may not, you don't know what it is, but we know what it is, and it's big. We just haven't told you yet.
They're always so good at this.
I know, right?
Like imagine, you know, there's two movies in this thing we pre-ordered that we have no idea what they are, really.
Yeah.
But I'm so hyped to find out what they are.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Fade to Black. I just want the plot follows a shy and lonely cinephile who embarks on a killing spree against his oppressors while impersonating classic film characters. So, yeah,
beautiful.
Total film nerd movie. But maybe we're kicking around an idea of maybe doing like a Vinegar Syndrome month when these come in the mail, to us. Yeah, who knows? We'll see. Like, maybe we'll do like all these movies, like talk about them all.
Yeah,
like a week or something.
I think that could be pretty fun if we pivot that into something. You know, it definitely would make me feel better about my purchase.
Yeah. Should we get into this, Dale? We've been yapping quite a long time, and we got a big movie to talk about.
Yeah, Chuck. Why don't you just tell the people out there?
Yes,
I'd love to. The Shivers.
A modern building called the Skyliner sits on a small island just outside Montreal. It is home to a fashionable upper crust and comes with all the amenities one would need. I can't say that word. So when I was typing this out, I was like, I'm not going to be able to say that word. It's just not, no way.
You called it.
But one resident has a sexual parasite inside of her. And in the beginning of the movie, we watch this parasite's creator trying to stop it because he knows things are going to go badly. They're out of his control, but what he doesn't know is it's too late. It's already starting to spread. So what we get is 90 minutes as we watch this parasite spread throughout this community in this big building, turning its hosts into simple creatures craving sexual contact. Will the building's on-site doctor and nurse be able to contain the outbreak? Or is their fate sealed? and that's, you know, it's plot-wise, there's not a lot to like say. Like it's not very complicated. You know, it's that simple. A building on an island with a parasite loose that turns people into sex-crazed fiends.
Yeah.
And you're basically watching what happens in that scenario.
Right off the bat, I think this is Cronenberg's first movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We should say that. Yeah.
In a way, for me, I'm lucky that Cronenberg didn't have the budget to pull off what he probably would have wanted to pull off. Because it could have been sickening. Yeah.
Even as it was, I was worried about you, Dale. I was worried.
Thank you for looking out for me, Chuck.
Because it is pretty sick what we did get. But I think I think the budget kept it from
being his vision.
Too disgusting. Yeah.
It's like Calgon. It's like the one person has it. But as it turns out, this doctor this doctor was working with a university to, this is the, you know, the pitch to justify what's going on. They were working in the field of parasites to try to basically replace our internal organs with a parasite that could possibly do function as the organ.
Yeah.
And that's where it started.
Yeah. That was sort of his, and it wasn't even like, that wasn't even what this doctor was interested in. Like,
right.
I think he was interested in the sexual part.
Yeah, right.
And that theory was what he like gave to like the government to get grants so he could do his research.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But it was, I was actually like that scene where the two doctors are sitting there eating a pickle.
They're keeping you up? You're bored, right? To you, organ transplant is just yesterday's kishkas, right? Look, you got man, right? And you got parasites that live in, on, and around man, right? So, why not breed a parasite that can do something useful? Huh? A parasite that can take over the function of a human organ.
So, this girl who has a belly full of these things, is murdered, but too late because she's already been servicing others in the building.
Yeah.
And another one is Mr. Two Door, as the doctor would.
Why did he insist on calling him Mr. Two Door while everyone else around him said Tudor?
Like, what? I mean, did nobody correct him? Is this the second unit director, like, filming his.
What was his name? The actor or the character was the doctor, Roger St. Luke. Was that his name? Yeah, Roger St. Luke.
Yeah.
And this guy, like, he looked like a blonde Canadian Warren Beatty to me.
Yeah.
The whole time, I was just like, he's trying to channel Warren Beatty, I think.
Translated on film, you get the concept that they're all horny and ready to pork and orgy out. Yeah. But it doesn't get, like, X-rated or R-rated. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's more like the writhing and the, you know, the assault, like the approaching and smothering of somebody else. It's not like, hard R in any sense of the word.
Yeah,
luckily.
I mean, you get some bees. That's like the biggest nudity you get. For me, even though this is his first like real movie, the way the first couple scenes are edited and cut together, it sets it apart from other genre movies of 1975. Just the fact that you're following this couple, like it starts with the audio of like the infomercial for the building.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's like giving you this exposition dump, but it's like this weird, cheesy kind of thing. Like, you know, we'll probably see that in like RoboCop many years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's then exactly you follow this young couple who are not stars in the movie, but they're just going to the building to like look at an apartment. Maybe they're going to rent it or whatever. And as they're entering the building, it's cut with this doctor up there in this horrible fight with this like young, pretty girl who we find out is infected with these parasites. And it just cuts back to this like back and forth between this, like this old man murdering this woman and then slicing her stomach open.
Right.
Cutting back to like this young couple, like looking at these stupid luxury apartments, you know, like deciding whether they want to move in. And to me, that was like, I was like, okay, I'm in the hands of someone who's not, you know, he's not there to make a paycheck. He's, you know, it's Cronenberg. He's like an artist, you know?
And it was cool because like these, you know, this couple doesn't know anything. Nobody knows what's going on in the apartment, but they're there for the lap of luxury. They're there because the security guard greeted them at the front desk and they're just like, they're ready to be treated like royalty for renting this apartment. And the guy, you know, the sleazy like apartment salesman comes out and he's ready to rent them whatever they need. They have furnished apartments that they need. And meanwhile, up in 1511, craziness is all around, but you know, it just like it kind of just exposes, like, even in this apartment building, everybody has lives and everybody's doing these things that you would never, ever, ever know about, even if, you know, a story came out of it later. Did you hear so-and-so, you know? Yeah. And it's like, no, I was down in my apartment living. You would never know. You might not never. You would never know. Yeah, yeah. 90% of the stories in an apartment building, you would never know.
Imagine if you lived in that apartment building, you like went away for the weekend while this happened, you came back.
Yeah.
Right. On Monday and you're like, oh my God, good thing I went away. I know.
Yeah. Missed that.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, yeah, I really liked this movie. I did remember as I was watching, I was like, okay, I did watch this before. Mm-hmm. And I can definitely see people's reaction to it. So this like, you know, people have negative reaction to this movie, and rightly so. It deals with sex and disgusting things in our bodies, wanting to come out, coming out of our mouths, breaking through our stomachs.
And our like letting loose of any inhibition or societal like walls, or, you know, just like any good taste wall. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
just,
and it's like,
because it's just like these people are just turned into sexual craving beings.
It's like they're, you know, it's like instead of zombies who want to eat brains, these people just want to F.
Right.
They just want to F anything they see. Like,
yeah. And including that, I mean, he goes so far, it's not you know, just the thought of it is creepy and it gives you the willies, but it's not graphical. But, you know, there's like a kid who's maybe 11 or 12 brought into that life. You know what I mean? And like a father-daughter scenario where, you know, the doctor like stumbles in and they're just sitting in the dark, almost like you're walking through a haunted house. Like they're like ready to be turned on, like the animatronics turn on when you enter the room. And, you know, it's like, the guy's like, have you met my daughter? She's very loved, you know, it's just, but they're all, you know, they're turned into something that, they're not if they were to have free thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's tough, and it is tough to watch, it's a lot of this, like as a lot of Cronenberg movies can be.
Yeah.
But I liked it quite a bit.
I'm
trying to think what else I wanted to talk about here.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes now. So I mean, things just get out of hand, right? Like there's all these different stories, but they all stem from the fact that these parasites are starting to run rampant through the building. I don't know if it's a criticism. I like the movie for the most part, but it's almost like there's certain part where you're trying to figure out exactly what the parasites want and or need out of a person, right? Because the parasites, people end up like throwing up the parasites, and the parasites end up crawling the walls. And so they're self-sufficient in terms of looking for the next body to invade. So the parasites are using you as sort of an incubator to multiply, presumably. But also, if a parasite lands on your arm and starts to, you know, burn / kiss you, you're infected with it at that point. So it's not just the spread through sexual contact and you know, the insertion of things and other things, like where it starts to get a little out of control is the parasites. To me, they're not in human bodies, yet they're spreading the virus just the same, as you know. So like, what does the writhing sexual human being need to be part of the story for?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's a little like it's a little fuzzy, because sometimes infected people would be murderous and like kill people. Other times they just were just like concerned about having sex. You know, and I mean, like the most like common, I mean, I guess you would also get infected by touching willies, but like the most common thing that they would show sometimes were like, is as simple as just kissing, and a parasite would jump into a new person's mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, and then you got the guy, you know, David Schwimmer. Like, oh, the, yeah, David Schwimmer, Adam Driver,
he's
hybrid.
Like, yeah. He's not Patient Zero, but it seems like he is like king of the parasites. Like, he is, he's got these kings, these worms, big, sexy penis worms,
big,
inside his
juicy
stomach.
Bastards. Yeah.
And he is just stewing in it.
Right.
And his wife is just like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, which, she's freaking out.
So, yeah. Like, I question him because he was having an affair with this girl,
yeah,
who was Patient Zero. But did he know that she was infected? Because ultimately, you at in the beginning, you can't figure out. He knows he's not feeling quite right.
Yeah.
But soon you figure out that he knows what's inside his little tummy tum. And then, yeah, like, as he's laying in bed suffering, he's determined to, like, master them, which is really, yeah, fucking freaky of a scene.
Yeah. Yeah. What is he saying? He's, like, talking to them, right?
Yeah. He's talking to them as they're, like, yeah, like, pushing up on his stomach skin, and he's just like, yeah, all right, calm down. Like, we're gonna get along. He's just like, you just gotta calm down, and we're gonna get along just fine. Like, so he knows. And then, like, the wife, yeah, is coming up the stairs, so he starts to shush them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's also like, you know, it's and that might not even be his conscious. Like, that might be the parasites, like, making him, you know, just protecting themselves. Like, don't, you know, don't tell your wife. Let's talk about the effects. So they got, I forget his name, but they got a Hollywood guy. They shipped a guy in from Hollywood who was known for being cheap and making cheap effects. And I watched the interview on the disc with this guy. Is still alive. He was quite a character. And he was like, he starts it off by saying, he's like, yeah, I turned down Night of the Living Dead and like some, all these other movies. He's like, like, he was like not impressed by like working for like low budget movies, I guess. But he was known as this guy who could do this. And the only reason he took on Shivers was because they said Barbara Steele is in it. Who?
Oh.
I'm not super familiar with Barbara Steele, but she's in, I know she's in Black Sunday, that Mario Bava movie. But she's like queen, I guess probably in the 60s more, she was known as like queen of horror. She's in all these, like, I think especially Italian horror movies.
Yeah.
And he saw Black Sunday when he was like a little kid in the theater. He said he went and like, he like went in the morning to the theater and just watched the movie over and over and over again until the theater shut down.
Wow.
He was just like, yes, infatuated with this movie and Barbara Steele. So he was like, oh my God, I have to work in this movie. And when he got there, he was like, I have to do Barbara Steele's makeup. Like, he was very concerned. He's like, I'm doing her makeup. Like, no one else can do it. Like, he was very excited. But yeah, he's the one, he made the little parasites. He made, like, they're out of like foam latex or rubber, and very simple, just like filaments in them so he could stretch them, make them look like they're like moving along the floor or up the cane. He talked about doing the one where Barbara Steele's in the bathtub and you see the parasite coming up the drain.
Yeah.
And how they just did it in like the sink in the bathroom. And he just put like put the worm on like with a coat hanger in it that was like bent. So when he stuck it up there, he could move it back and forth. It looked like its little head was moving around.
Oh man.
but it works really well. Like, and it's, yeah, it's disgusting. I think, I don't know if Cronenberg did the drawings for the worms. I think he might have done them.
Mm.
Like the designs, and he was tasked with making them.
Wow.
And actually, one interesting thing, the shot, the one worm that falls, the guy spits it out the balcony, David Schwimmer, and it lands on the old, yeah, lady's umbrella.
There's so much humor in that. God damn, that was the funniest thing. And
that was,
I was
awesome.
Like, oh God, yes, this is the greatest thing.
Yeah. But the shot, like, it cuts to the grass and you see it slithering into the bushes. That shot was the test shot that the makeup guy did at his apartment, like the front lawn of his apartment in Hollywood.
Oh my God.
Like, he shot that just as, yeah, a proof of concept. And he was like kind of mad they used it in the movie because he didn't think it looked that good.
You could see the string.
Yeah, that's what he said. He's like, you could see the string.
Yeah,
he was mad they used it, but but
you when know, you're good, you're good.
It's cheaper. Yeah,
I mean, people start to lose their minds, and you know, obviously, you have an apartment building full of people. They all start getting nuts and sexual, yeah. And it's multiplies profoundly. It's so funny because it's so funny. I hate when I say that. In the first three quarters of this movie, the cast is eight people max, but the last quarter, it's an apartment building full of people.
Yeah, it almost gets like Dawn of the Dead, like zombies.
Yeah,
like a mall full of zombies, like that type of thing. Like all of a sudden, it's just crazed people are spilling out of like doorways and. Yeah, you're right. The ending, the last bit of the movie, like it turns into this, like there's just people like spilling out of the doorways, filling up the hallways. They're all like trying to have sex with each other. And like if they spot someone who's not infected, like they're just like, I got to get that person. And it's just this frenzy.
Yeah, you realize that you realize that they're not just filming in two rooms with a cast of eight characters, but they're filming in an apartment building and they're using everybody. And these people are from all walks of life. It's like, it's like a sitcom or something, the way everybody is just so unique in their, in their apartment. You know what I mean? Like the apartment just brings them all and concentrates them all into this enclosed building space, but they're all different, man. They all look different. They like these weird couples who have no business being together, you know, it looks like, but obviously they're happy and living together until they became infected. And then now they're all just ready to smother each other out of
the real melting pot.
Yeah. Out of instinct.
And we're kind of like the people who end up being the heroes is this Dr. St. Luke. He's kind of like figuring it out. He's like the first guy who like saw the first body, and he meets with that dead guy's like medical partner who like fills him in on the experiments they've been doing. And
who that guy brought something. I mean, his voice alone.
I love him so
much. I know, me too.
That voice so deep and like just like mountains of deepness in that guy's voice.
Here, Hobbes believed that man is an animal that thinks too much, an over-rational animal that's lost touch with its body and its instincts. How do you like that? In other words, you know, too much brain and not enough guts. So what he came up with to help our guts along was a parasite that's, a combination of aphrodisiac and venereal disease that will hopefully turn the world into one beautiful, mindless orgy.
He was just acting his balls off.
Yeah. He was great. He was really good.
Like having that conversation and looking real life, like looking like he's just eating that sandwich and handling that pickle and sharing his pickle, eating other people's pickles.
Yeah. Hey, you finishing that pickle? David Schwimmer's wife, she was in a bunch of Cinepix movies.
Oh.
So she was like, she had like a pretty big career going in like the Quebecois film industry.
You know, I hurt for her. I mean, she was genuinely concerned for David Schwimmer, Adam Driver's well-being and their relationship and whether they could handle his distancing and stuff. And she just did not have a time of it. And then, you know, she's just trying to be there for him. And he wants to be on a break. He's like, you're my wife. Lay with me, be with me. You're my wife.
Yeah.
Do your, you know, he's like, do your duty or whatever the fuck he was saying.
Yeah. 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 It was gross. Yeah. But she, like, I mean, she could tell this is not, like, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
Like,
she's grieving the entire time. And he's like, sliming up on her.
Yeah.
She's like, this is not normal.
Yeah. And she's like friends with Barbara Steele, who's, she like goes to this like woman. I guess she like, seemed like she was single and lives alone, you know, for like emotional support and like, you know, they were just good friends and stuff. But then the last time she goes to her, she had been infected by a parasite and she's much more convincing, and gets her to kiss her. And that's one of the best money shots in the movie where you see Barbara Steele's throat in profile and it's bulging. They kiss and then it cuts to her, the other girl's throat, and you see it bulge. It's like, oh God, yeah, it's made it over.
She received.
Oh,
I want you to make love with me.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. There's a, also an aspect of the, like that scene, I think, she had to do a lot of crying in this movie. So something I learned, that actress, mm-hmm. David Schwimmer's wife, she gets hired for the job. And she had told everyone, oh yeah, I can cry on cue, whatever. No problem. The crying's no problem. But when she got to set, she came up to Cronenberg and was like, I lied. I can't cry. And I'm really freaking out. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so they like, she's like, this is where we're going to cut up onions and put it in my eyes, you know, to help me cry. And so they try this for the first time and it didn't work. And so this is crazy. Like, this story is insane. Like, everyone would be fired nowadays. Like, this movie would have been shut down. she asked Cronenberg to hit her in the face, to slap her across the face.
Oh my God.
To get her to cry. And he does it. Like, he's like, does it really softly. And she's like, that's not hard enough. Like, you gotta hit me. Yeah. So like every time she had to cry, they would go into another room and he would slap her. Isn't that insane?
Jesus. That's hard to hear. Wow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Barbara Steele, by the end of the conversation, she's like, oh, you asked to do it and it works. Like I think the implication was she was like, oh, maybe I could do that.
Then she's like, I want you to make love with me.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Of course.
Oh, Barbara Steele.
So by the end, you know, everybody in this hotel is experienced everybody else. They've all had some tush with each other. They've writhed and groped and skinned on skinned everyone. So they all get neatly into their cars and start filing out of the parking garage to go do evil things outside of Nun's Island.
Yeah.
And that's how the movie ends.
I thought it was a great ending. I thought it was a great ending. Like, I'm glad they didn't win. Like, the doctor and the nurse weren't a hero and somehow managed to stop it.
Right.
Because how could you stop it? Like, the whole, it was hundreds of people. But yeah, it just ends with,
The time is 5:26 a.m. This is Gerald Keyes with a Mediascope Sunrise News Bulletin. There is still no confirmation by Montreal City Police concerning alleged reports of a citywide wave of violent sexual assaults. The assaults, believed to have originated in the vicinity of Starliner Island, began late last night and have spread with increasing frequency this morning. Reports of the attacks have been termed irresponsible and hysterical by a Montreal City Police spokesman. Stay tuned for further details on Mediascope News at 6.
How about that car crash though, Dale? In the they did this car crash in the parking garage underneath the building that looked very real and looked like somebody got really hurt.
Yes. It was unless they had multiple cars, they had one shot at kind of getting this right. And they did it, but it was rough.
Yeah. It was like a T-bone up against like a cement pole. And it, like, you can see the humans inside there. Like, maybe there were dummies in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the way they jostle and, like, their hair is flying, it's like, holy crap, man.
And
I hope they weren't in there.
And that's...
I have a feeling there was no one in there. I think it was just dummies or something.
This parking garage was like, they try to make it up to be like, oh, this is your luxurious parking garage and your luxurious apartment. This parking garage was a shithole. There was nothing pretty about this parking garage.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
So... You know, it just goes along with the car crash, these like 70s tanks that are being driven around.
Yeah.
You know, every car is made of just heavy steel. Every car weighs 6 tons and they're just T-boning each other in the parking garage with like real glass, like the windshield had like real glass in it and it like, it kicked it out. It's crazy.
I really like that nurse character. I kind of wanted her to get a better ending. I would have rathered her been
Yes.
In the doctor's place. Because that fucking mumbler guy was just too much.
Yeah, she was a cutie, this nurse. I liked her.
Yeah.
She was cool. And then she, you know, unfortunately, she got it too, just like everybody else. Yeah.
I love some of the comedy. Another comedic scene was the doctor told her to wait with the older couple who the lady got her arm burned by the worm that yeah. like crawled up her cane. And those two were so hilarious. Oh my God. Like, I don't think they were actors. They were like a real, like,
yeah,
like Quebecois couple. Like,
yeah,
it like barely spoke English. Like they were very, you know, French Canadian.
And the husband, and like, smushes it with her cane, like smushes a parasite with her yes.
cane. Yeah, and they're just like watching like TV up in the room.
Yeah.
And she, like, the nurse is like freaking out because she realizes like how bad it is. But these two are just like, da da da. Like, do you want, like, I think they're like eating dessert or something. I don't know. Oh, man.
Yeah. That was, that
Shivers,
was
Dale.
Shivers.
I liked it. Yeah. I liked it quite a bit. It makes me want to keep watching more Cronenberg. I dug out my Cronenberg on Cronenberg book to read the chapter on Shivers.
Is there a chapter for each film?
There's...
Is that kind of how it's...
It's out? Like... yeah, it's either one or two films each chapter. It's like... it was like a bunch of interviews over many years with him that the interviewer cut together.
Oh, okay.
So the... Yeah, I think the chapter I read was on Shivers and Rabid, which makes me want to read... Watch Rabid now.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Rabid.
Yeah, that I've seen that one. I haven't seen a lot of Cronenberg, but I've seen Rabid. And, you know,
I'd like to watch The Brood, definitely, for this show, because that's one of my favorite movies of all time.
And it's just, you know, you got to be prepped for, like, the look. Cronenberg's gross look. When he gets gross, like, it's a signature look. It's all...
Yeah. All right, should we get to listener feedback?
You, my dear listeners, can send your feedback. batandspiderpod@gmail.com. It's where you send us an email. We'll read it live on the air. You send us a voice message. We will play that along with our messages if you call the Bat and Spider hotline at 315-544-0966. Let's get to these bad boys. First up is our boy TJ Hamilton. So sorry to get behind and miss out on Martin. As for this week's movie, they used to show Abbott and Costello movies every Sunday morning of my childhood on WPIX out of New York City. Would see Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein every 6 months as a child. The scene with Costello strapped to the spinning table as the monster came for him used to terrify me. Yeah, that was frightening. Would have been frightening.
That's a good scene.
You want to know more about the movie and why the monster's head makeup moved when he got up? Watch this short documentary. And he links to a documentary called...
Is it called The World of Glenn Strange?
It's called... Ready for this? The Making of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Oh, cool.
So all right. I will try to remember to put that in the show notes when I'm editing.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to watch that.
So yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. Tim Hamilton, thank you, my friend. That is great. Thank you for the email.
Thank you, Tim.
Hey, Bat and Spider, Mikey P here again. I think I called in already, but, you know, delete this if I'm over my quota. I was wondering if there's a way to get the Toby Forsman of Whipsong music, the songs for Bat and Spider, somewhere that I can listen to. You know, with Halloween coming, it'd be cool to play that throughout the house. He made a great Revenger soundtrack that I've saved, and it constantly comes up on shuffles, and I play it through. It's cool chip song stuff. Just wonder if I could get that anywhere. Love you. Bye.
You know, I'm not sure. I should ask Toby about that. If I don't know if it's... I know he has the power to put some stuff up on streaming, so I'll have to see if he's done that. But yeah, that's something I've been meaning to do, is just put the songs up as their own episodes. That would probably be the easiest way for us to get that out there. But yeah, I'll talk with Toby, Mikey P, and see what the deal is with that. But that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good idea, Mikey P.
Everybody needs a good Halloween soundtrack. Thank you, Mikey P. Love you, bud.
Love you, man.
happen later.
Hey, Corey. I'm just coming after that Tales from the Crypt episode with Don Rickles and Bobcat. One of my favorites. I actually got to see Don Rickles in Vegas in the 90s at a small little place, two drink minimum, where they literally put two drinks on the table when you sit down. He was great. He was amazing. And then I got to see him. I was, of course, not near the front, so I didn't get Rickleized or whatever you would call it, Rickled. And I saw him again before he died when he did that tour with Regis Philbin, where they just kind of sat and talked about his life, and that was really cool too. It was a nice little little bookend with me and Don Rickles. But anyway, great episode. The other favorite Tales from the Crypt of mine is called Lower Birth. I don't know if you remember it or not. It's got a good whammy in there. I won't spoil it. Oh, I don't remember what season it's from though. Love the Martin episode. Really good as well. And, yeah, that Martin soundtrack is great. And I don't think I've heard the Goblin version. I need to do a little looking on the internet to see if I can find that, because I'd like to hear that myself. All right, guys, take care, and I'll see you with Abbott and Costello.
Awesome. Thank you, Corey. I can't believe how many times you've seen Don Rickles live in the flesh.
Yeah.
Freaks me out. That's amazing.
How many people could say that?
I don't know. Thousands?
Probably. You're probably right. You're probably right.
What else did he talk about in there? That was a lot.
Talks about the Goblin edition of Martin. Yeah.
Look, somebody needs to get this figured out and get us a Martin DVD.
That's what Blu-ray. I'm saying.
With both cuts.
Make me sick.
Some blowhards doing the audio commentary, whatever. We got to get that out there. Come on.
Somebody's got to get up there, the Fat Cat Money Men, and start working this out. Because you know who's suffering.
Stupid differences aside.
You know who's suffering.
Yeah. Preach it, Dale. I can feel the wrestler energy coming out of your bones.
When I was in Vegas, I saw The Amazing Jonathan.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. The Golden Nugget.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Head jealousy.
The only time I went to Vegas, I was driving across country by myself, and I got in across the Hoover Dam. I got into Vegas. It was probably like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I was like, this is it. This is my time to see Vegas. And it sucked. I went to Circus Olay. Is that what it's called? No, Circus Circus.
Circus, yeah.
Circus Circus. And I sat in this giant empty restaurant, ordered a veggie burger, and just walked through like the gambling areas. The casinos.
There you go.
And it was just filled with like old people just shoveling quarters in these machines. And I just like, I was like, man, this is depressing. Oh, this is not for me. Like, I'm sure if I went during the day and people were actually out and things were happening, I would have had a different experience. But
probably not much different, honestly.
I just got, it was spooky. Like, I just didn't, it felt haunted, that place.
Yeah.
You know, imagine the amount of lives that have been crushed in that city.
Jesus, like, Chuck.
Monetarily and otherwise. Like, you could just feel it in the air.
Dale Andrews, mental note, 1 hour, 14 minutes. Edit in the Price is Right losing sound, please.
Make love to me, Janine. Make love to me, you're my wife. Hey, Bat and Spider. I watch Shivers, and the thing that I learned is everything is erotic. Everything is sexual. This is actually the first David Cronenberg film that I've watched, somehow. And what a ride. I want to say I thought the movie was great, but it sure is an interesting story, and I can see why people love his movies. Makes me ready to jump into more cronies, if you catch my drift. One thing I noticed looking at his filmography is he hasn't really done any like big franchises. He really does his own stuff. So my question to you was, if you could have him do a film from any franchise, what would it be? Thanks.
Cheers.
Thank you, Pro. Oh, and thank you for dropping he referenced the nurse in Shivers talking about the dream she had and saying how everything is sexual, everything is erotic, even death is erotic. And that was maybe my favorite line of dialogue. I absolutely loved that, her talking about her dream. I just...
Chuck.
Oh, it's so good.
Chuck stood up clapping.
I did.
Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And that you're... even if you didn't enjoy it, like, I forget, his review was like, was it like 2 stars or something?
It was less than 3, and 3 is good.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 is good. But I like that he could still see why Cronenberg is someone that people talk about.
Oh, yeah. Protalexis, I mean, he keeps an open mind, no matter what.
While I think about the question you posed, Proto, I just learned last night that before he did The Fly, he was prepping a script and pre-production to do Total Recall.
Whoa.
Can you believe that, Dale?
I could totally see that.
Yeah. I think it was like 84 or 5 he was working on it.
That's crazy. I don't know
what happened. It didn't happen. But yeah, that would have been fun.
Yeah. Michael, his boy, his reunited Michael story. Ironsides.
Oh, God.
Again.
Yeah, I wonder if that's why Ironside was... No, I don't know why he ended up in it. That's weird.
See you at the party, Lictor.
What big Hollywood franchise would you like to see Cronenberg do if he was held at gunpoint and had to?
Yeah.
Because I don't think he ever would, like, on purpose.
That's a good question. I mean, I can't even fathom.
I mean, the easy answer for me, I stole this from other people, but like Scanners to me is the best X-Men movie. Like, cause I haven't really liked many of the X-Men movies like at all, but Scanners is like a really cool version of that, of young people with powers who are like being hunted by government agents, Michael Ironside. I would love to see him like just do that with stupid, silly spandex costumes on, you know? I could see him, you know, imagine him like doing like the gross X-Men characters who have like weird bodies, like the Blob. Imagine him directing the villain, the Blob.
Oh my God.
Like absorbing stuff, you know?
And you want kids to go see that, Chuck? Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at his, I mean, I've seen, Chuck, I could count on my one hand how many I've seen. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, History of Violence I liked, but that's based on a graphic novel to begin with, so that's not really him. God, I don't know. I'm so stupid.
There's a lot of him in it. What are out there? We got
Proto, I'm
we
sorry.
Got Transformers, we got Terminator movies.
Something with Dwayne the Rock Johnson in it.
God. Oh God. Yeah. This sucks. I don't like this question. That's making me angry.
At one stage, he was considered by George Lucas as a possible director for Return of the Jedi.
Oh, wow. Man, that list just keeps growing.
Key ripes. Anyway, sorry, Protalexis, that if that's all we could provide you, but check out Protalexis on the 70mm podcast. They're our best friends over there, and they're doing some really great work, and you should listen.
Yeah, definitely.
We roll on. One more. The coup de grace, Chuck.
Canada. Bat and Spider. It's Catcher calling from Canada because you're doing our hometown hero, David Cronenberg's Shivers. So excited to watch this. Chuck, like you, The Brood is a personal favorite of mine. When I first saw it, I just fell so deeply in love with Cronenberg's style and this whole body horror thing that he does, especially like obviously in his early work. So it was such a great opportunity to see sort of the earliest example of it, and I think it's a blast. I love how he examines the frailties of the meat sacks we walk around in every day, and how not in control we are, and how terrifying it can be when we lose that control. And the Shivers is all about that. I think. It's definitely going to be difficult for some modern audiences to watch, but I think everything that's in there is there for a reason. It's telling a very specific story, and I love everything about it. So hopefully you guys loved it too, and I can't wait to hear what you had to say. Have a good one. Love you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
God damn it, Ketcher.
Jesus, our number one only cheerleader.
Only Ketcher could have come in and just rendered our whole, everything we said in this episode, just useless.
Yeah.
Because he hit it on the head in under a minute. Said things that were inside of my brain that I couldn't get out, but he did it.
How about we spent, what, 30 plus minutes talking about it? Do you he and everybody else who's a fan of Cronenberg probably screaming at us at the top of their lungs.
Oh, yeah.
You idiots, you missed the entire point of it.
Yeah. You idiots. We're meat bags.
What about the human frailties?
Yeah.
Dummies.
Ketcher, you're the best. When are you going to start your own show?
Yeah.
Ketcher's Canadian Cinema.
I'll just send you back your voicemail, and if you could just like use that intro that you sung.
Send it back, Dale.
Forward with attachment.
What? That would be funny if we started, if we got like trolley voicemails and we just send it back.
That's, please, Chuck. I might not even leave that in. Who knows? All right, that's it.
That's it.
Got through it.
No, it's not it, Dale. You have to tell me what we're watching next week.
Okay. It is that time. I thought about this. And I already checked Letterboxd. Okay, so anyway, start from the beginning, my little story. Not every week we need to have a story, but I have a story.
I love when there's a story.
You know, we haven't, you mentioned him earlier, we haven't really got into any Corman talk.
Ooh.
And he's due.
Mama.
But, no, there's no real but. There's a whole lot that I could have chosen from, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. It just so happens that our friends at 70 Millimeter are doing Man with the X-Ray Eyes. Which is Corman production. I wanted to sort of, I had this all planned out in my head. We're stepping out of the horror genre once again for a little more of the exploitation side of things. And not necessarily Corman directed, but Corman produced. Mm-hmm. With our man, Sylvester Stallone in the movie, Death Race 2000.
Oh, wow. What a pick.
1975. Directed by Paul Bartel, who is huge, apparently. Like, I know the guy. I never knew his accolades, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. But the dude has done it all.
Tell me about Paul Bartels. Who is that? Is he a wrestler? Why do I think he's a wrestler?
Paul Bartel is... mostly known for being in front of the camera. He was in a ton of pictures. He was in Gremlins 2, Escape from LA, Chopping Mall, National Lampoon's European Vacation. He was he was one of the Frogers as one of last year's Pig in the Poke champions. And he is up against Clark W. Griswold in the championship.
I see a picture of him. I recognize him.
I always see him in a thumbnail for the film Eating Raoul, which is about a couple who ends up eating other people. Dude is all over the map, but...
That's amazing. I had no idea he was a film director,
too. I know.
That's awesome. And look who does the sound on Death Race 2000. You see this, Dale?
Ben Burtt.
He's the guy who created the sound of lightsabers and light blasters, right?
Yeah.
From Star Wars.
I'm pretty sure you're...
Yeah.
Spot on.
Ben Burtt. I'm sure someone will write a letter if I'm wrong, but yeah. Ben Burtt. This is cool, Dale. What a pick.
And our boy Sly's in it, along with David Carradine and others, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is like pre-Rocky? When did Rocky come out?
77.
Yeah, so he was like a nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, this was what?
I think he did like...
The Nazi soccer movie?
He did like a softcore porn, I think.
Good, he's probably got
this movie.
Huge wiener anyway. So.
Oh, man. I hope we get to see Sly's Wiener in Death Race 2000.
Yeah. Might as well call it Sly's Wiener 2000. Probably, because it's probably in there.
It's ridiculous. I see that it's playing on good old Tubi TV USA.
So I'm going to forward with attachment, our choice, and just forward a rate to TubiTV@gmail.com probably. And yeah. we'll keep pegging away. They're going to reply to us. They have to. It's the law.
God. How big is Tubi's tower in San Francisco? Like they must have like a... Like it's like their own Sears building, you know.
Oh yeah,
the Chrysler building.
It's probably got you know, like doctors there, a variety shop there, all kinds of things right on prem, as they say.
Yeah, laundromat in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Miller, I see him at the very end of the cast list.
Yes,
he's a Corman player. Mm. Also in Gremlins too. In Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Dale, this is a great pick. I'm excited.
Yeah. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Okay, good.
No, I've never seen it.
I was, that was going to be my only, like, I was going to reveal it on the show, yeah. But then you can be like, oh, you already saw it. I watched it last year.
It's always a tough line. It's like, I always want to surprise you, but I'm like, oh, what if he's seen it? Like, should I ask him first?
Right.
What if he just watched it yesterday?
Honestly, I was going to go by a film directed by Corman, but I found my way to this.
Yeah, I mean, he like, you know, he directed a lot, but he produced a ton too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, it's still got his fingerprints on it.
Yeah.
That's cool. Awesome. I'm excited.
And that would be for episode 26, Chuck.
Oh man, 26. Climb to the top of Apple Podcasts, mm-hmm. Right?
Chuck, until next time, this has been Bat and Spider, episode 25.
It's hot in here, Dale.
Yeah.
I thought I was done sweating when I was recording.
It's back.
But I'm sweating.
It's back.
It's back. Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
Chuck, I gotta let this cat out. I'll be right back. It's getting out of hand.